Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
So we did speak to the spokesperson from the MMC, from the city of Johannesburg. I don't know. Maybe just tell us we're on our own. But I certainly didn't. I didn't feel it. I mean, they're really to tell us that we can't sell our power back to the grid until the new financial year. Well, that starts in July. Yep, that's inspiring. And that makes me think that this is being dealt with seriously. What do you think? Was it just me? Was I the only one uninspired by that? It's very problematic for me. That really didn't feel like we're on the same team. That made me feel like we're on our own. And one of the impacts, of course, that we are starting to see is load shedding impacting and having an effect on many, many different areas. We've seen it in terms of agriculture, the chickens, and we know as well that there's now concern around water. Well, what is the problem and what are the dangers around water? Professor Anthony Turton, he's a professor of the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State. Professor Anthony Turton, good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you and your listeners. And yes, it seems interesting to hear that you are starting to come to a very important realization that the government is in power, but they're not in control. That's what you've just basically reported on a few seconds ago.
Well, that is true. That is true. And as much as we want to think, or we might want to think, that the solutions are going to come from them, maybe it's time we realize that they're simply not.
I think that's a very important moment that you've just articulated there, because up until now, I've been watching this thing very, very closely. I've been watching this whole state failure thing for almost two decades now, but I've been interested in the concept of state failure and trying to understand it. And a critical moment comes when people realize that the ruling party is in power but not in control. And you start seeing that when they start making statements such as the one you just mentioned now, where that statement is not tethered in any reality, and it also lacks any credibility or any empathy with the general public. So even the ordinary lay person in the street realizes that that cannot be, and that is just not going to work out. As so, there's the illusion of power, but right, without the lack, you know, with the total lack of control, which now takes us into the new space of where we are now. Because I think once people realize that this thing is happening faster and faster around them, and that there is no general customer coming to rescue the people on the stranded on the hill, they're not going to be rescued. People have to basically pretty much do it themselves. And we're starting to see all sorts of initiatives that are happening now. The private sector, big business, etc., starting to realize. I've just seen reports now that Sasol, for example, is signing contracts with private energy suppliers, etc. So individual entities are now starting to cut their own deals. All government can do is they can regulate and therefore act as a stumbling block, as you just reported now, but they don't really have the ability to stop anything or to control it. All they can do is that pretense of being in control, but actually that pretense they can project the illusion that they are in power, but while hiding at all times the fact that they're actually no longer in control. And this is the vulnerable thing that we're in right now, and we've got to get that message across, because when the crash comes now, it becomes quite catastrophic, and therefore it's not a question of fear-mongering or being alarmist, just a question of allowing people to wake up, smell the roses, understand the reality of what's happening around them, and then for them to realize that the power is actually in their hands. They alone are going to solve their own problems, because the state is simply unable to do it.
So what does that mean? What does that mean in terms of solving our own problems?
Well, if we get into the water set issue, before we get into the water set issue, let me just share an observation that I've had now from KZN. So I've been living in KZN now for a couple of years. I was born here initially, but I'm now living here. And there's all sorts of catastrophes that happen in KZN. Mm. And recently, on top of the normal load shedding, we had a high voltage switchgear breakdown. And that then triggered a 48-hour complete total regional blackout over and above the load shedding. And I just observed what was happening during that time. And the first thing that started happening was that the cold chain broke down. So people at home were unable to keep their frozen goods frozen. And what I started seeing happening now is people started panicking because their refrigerators were not defrosting. There was no prospect of Eskom coming to the rescue for at least 48 hours. And then people started cooperating amongst themselves, where a next-door neighbor might have had a generator, and then the person without the generator would cut to the dealer and say, can you please keep my frozen goods in your fridge?
Right.
So it's that kind of grassrootsy cooperation, but people haven't yet realized it. They haven't yet realized, you know, what's actually happening. But I would predict now, I'm giving a talk very soon to one of the big investment banks, and there I'm going to talk about the fact that the cold chain is starting to collapse. Now, we're seeing the collapse on the whole cold chain from the Northern Cape onwards. So we can now apply that knowledge of the collapsing cold chain, and we can ask the same question. If it's happening there in the cold chain, what is it doing in the water supply chain? Because they are both complex logistical structures, and neither of which can be fully insulated from what's going on around them. And you've got lots and lots of little transactions happening along this value chain. And each of them is not in a bubble of its own. You can't insulate it totally. So it's a cumulative impact of things. And it comes down to the fact that firstly, be aware that this is happening. And then secondly, start developing your own resilience strategy. And your own resilience strategy at home would be, I would suggest, having at least a local source of supply of water that you can use to flush the toilet. That's a very, very important thing because as soon as the toilet can no longer be flushed, it creates an immediate local level crisis, you know, within the household. So you've got to be able to flush the toilet, and there are various ways of being able to do that. But then the other thing is separating that, let's call it the grey water you're going to use for toilet flushing, separating that from potable water, you know, the clean water you're going to use for cooking, et cetera. But that's really what I think is going to start happening. And nowadays, most people tend to be living, and this is a generalization now, but I think it's a useful generalization. Let's say many people are now living in sort of cluster complexes, et cetera, and I think body corporates and what have you. And I see that these body corporates are probably going to start becoming a very important component in the development of resilience strategies going forward, because ultimately they are, let's think of them as a local form of government in the direct, intimate contact with the people that are affected. And I've been working there in that space for about 10, 15 years, and that's also a very complicated space because they generally don't want to accept that responsibility. They generally don't have the skills, etc. But ultimately they are really the front line of defense, and it's going to be thrust upon them whether they like it or not.
And that's important, because it is time that we, from everything that you're saying, just start taking responsibility. We can kick and scream and hate it and be justifiably outraged. But there are solutions, and the solutions are in our hands, and we actually need to deal with them, don't we? That's really what you're saying.
Absolutely. I mean, all I can do is I can observe and I can share my experiences, you know, with people as we're doing now. So one experience that I'm picking up here now in KZN is that I'm working with a couple of different body corporates and also some frail care facilities where you've got elderly people that need frail care that don't get water for sometimes days, if not weeks on end. So what we're doing in all of those cases now is we're actually sinking a borehole. And once the borehole is there, we now plumb the borehole in to give you some kind of local resilience. So I live in a body corporate complex, and we're completely off grid there when it comes to water. Now the important message is we are off grid until we reach stage 6 load shedding. When we reach stage 6 load shedding, we can no longer go off grid because we now need to pump water out of the borehole, and we haven't got energy. So which means we now have to have a standby generator for just water supply system. See, so this gives insight into the interconnectedness of these very complex engineered systems that is the foundation of modern living, what we would call modern civilization. Civilization is built on the back of civil engineering, and the assumptions in civil engineering are invisible. People enjoy the benefits of the assumptions without understanding what those assumptions are. And one of the assumptions is that you can't have your electricity offline for longer than 12 hours out of 24, because then, you know, you lack the ability to move fluid around, pump water, etc. And, you lack the ability to fill storage containers that you've built at great cost to store water. So all of these assumptions are now being challenged as we approach stage six and beyond stage six. And this is where I think you're going to start seeing the fabric of society slowly, slowly tearing apart now, because all of these thousands of little transactions that happen all over the show that people are completely unaware of. You know, we are living in a highly interconnected society, highly interconnected space. And as each of those little things are starting to be put under terrible pressure and they start breaking up, you know, we've got to come up with a band-aid and fix this thing up. And, you know, I think the important thing is just be aware. But the very, very important message is cooperate. Learn how to put your differences aside. Learn how to stop pointing fingers of blame. Learn how to reach out and take each other's hand in a cooperative manner, because the ability to cooperate is really what's going to take us through this crisis. And the propensity to squabble is what's going to sink the Titanic faster than it's currently going down.
I think that is such important advice. And as negative as the basis for it might be, I think the message is so positive, is we need to reframe this. We need to start looking at how, each of us can do it. Have we got solar? Have we got a generator? Have we got a way maybe that can help out our neighbors, a little bit of our street? What can we do to assist other people that are all living within the same ecosystem that we are? I think that is an absolutely fantastic message, maybe based on a negative, but actually an incredibly positive one. And I thank you for that, Professor Anthony Turton, Professor at the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State.